So we've seen quite a few spy movies on the cards at the moment, not least with Bond coming out. So how do you feel The Man from U.N.C.L.E. is set apart from that? What's its USP, if you like, I suppose?
I mean, the reason we were interested in Man from U.N.C.L.E. initially was because we felt that we occupied a space that no one else was occupying. And it felt like what we saw as the golden era of thriller, the thriller spy genre, if you will. But with retrospect, we could weed out the chaff and keep the wheat in from our perspective. So it feels like it's a revisionist version, in a what we like to see as a positive sense, of the amalgamation of those early, the early genre. And we felt we had a unique voice in that. So it's funny, I don't feel as though we're competing particularly in the spy world, do you?
I mean, we feel, I think, two things. I think we feel, because our film is set in the 60s, no other spy movie is, and that's one of the conditions we had of doing the movie. It was at one point they asked us whether we would do a contemporary, and we said no. The other thing which makes us completely different, Man from U.N.C.L.E., completely different from any other spy title, is that there are two spies instead of the typical lone James Bond, Jason Bourne agent. In this particular case, it's two guys.
Yeah.
And the idea of an American and a Russian, arch enemies at the height of the Cold War, when America and Russia are enemies, is such a fertile territory for storytelling that we couldn't resist.
For me, that was what I felt from it. I felt like what makes this different is the two heroes really hate each other, you know, as it were, because of obvious reasons. So in terms of how Army and Henry approached that, what did you make of their approach, of their acting?
Most of that got taken care of in the casting process. That the casting process was really a reduction of actors that were on the same frequency as us. So by the time they were playing those roles, we knew that a casting session was 1,000 words, if you will. So we'd done all the hard work, and then on the day, if we felt like riffing a little, then we could do that because we were all on the same page in the frequency of what it was going to be. So there was always going to be conflict between them. But the question is, does that work like a hand and glove, or does that work like two hands? And we felt that during the casting process that they were always going to understand the tone, and I think they did understand the tone. So that was really taken care of right.
You were looking for contrast, weren't you? I remember you saying to me,
I think filmmaking is all about contrast.
And speaking of the tone, you know, there's always the tendency to go into self-parody with this, you know, there's the danger of being too ironic. Did you set yourself some rules so that you did not go into
parody,
being too cheeky or too too parody?
Yeah, no, it's a good point, actually. And that, there was a non-stop conversation about that.
Mm-hmm.
Because you want to take it up to the line.
Mm-hmm.
But once you cross that line, it's hard to recover from it. So there was a non-stop conversation about how far you can push it before you lose the value of the stakes and before it turns into a parody.
He's a very big risk taker. He likes to push it as far as
there are rules for the characters. Well, you can't do this, you can't do this, the gadgets have to be this.
Not necessarily, because there's an unsaid rule.
Yeah.
And that is, we're aware of the situation that you just mentioned. And as long as you're aware of the situation that there is a danger of it turning into a parody, but you've got to take up to the line of a parody before you cross that line and it becomes a parody, because it's that you want to be going in that direction, but everyone has to be aware that once you cross that line, like I say, it's going to take a long, you have to work very hard to come back from it. So it was just an unsaid understanding.
I see one example in the seduction scene between Elizabeth Debicki's character and Henry Cavill's character, where they meet in his hotel room, and inevitably he has to do his thing and she has to do her thing, but you kind of cut away and you make it look on from your sidelines, and that kind of flirtation.
No, I'm with you. But that wasn't it was an ongoing conversation.
I think you have very good. He has very strong instincts about how, you know, exactly where that line is. And I think you feel it on the day and you, in the performance, and you often look for a range of performances. So there are ones that go slightly further over the top, ones that play it straighter, and somehow you find the balance in the middle.
Yeah, that's true actually. We sort of more or less did it three ways.
Yeah.
The straighter way, the take the piss way, and then get stuck in the middle way. Just because, you know, then you've got some latitude.
Mm-hmm. But instead of going to the edge of the paralleling, in what of the themes was more difficult, you know, in what of the, you know, maybe the, like we say, the...
It's comedy. Comedy is always the hardest, that's to create that tone is always
but
the
But within
hardest,
the political context, or the action, or the, you know, the romance.
In every respect. But comedy, you can be on thin ice, because you are playing with your stakes. So once you cross the line into a parody, then no longer do the stakes mean anything. But at the same time, I like comedy, and I don't want to take ourselves too seriously. So in the end, you're entertainment. So it's somehow trying to keep the reins on a wild animal. If you relax those reins too quickly, gravity will just have its way, and you'll end up with something that you're embarrassed with.
Also, we talk a lot about, and I think guys are very interested in the idea of the sort of the human comedy. In real life, real politics often verges on parody. Once the human factor comes into it, once you're talking about two people and their macho posturing, it doesn't matter anymore if they're Russian or American CIA or KGB. What matters is they're two men and they both want to prove that one's better than the other. So it's the human part of it all, which I think we can all relate to. I think it's something we talk about a lot and something he's very keen on exploring.
I've been
on the set in Rome, in Piazza di Spagna, when you shoot the Trinità dei Monti scene, and I noticed that all the Italian references are so wonderful, and I read that you spoke reference not only to Fellini, La Dolce Vita, but also Antonioni, La Ventura. So how do you manage to juggle any reference and put in this way very free?
Go on. Since you came up with all the fancy names,
I think he has an amazing instinct and taste for things, and especially for visual thing, and he has a very strong sense of things. We had an amazing costume designer, amazing production designer, and we're surrounded by a team of the best possible people. And they come to him with ideas, and he goes, no, that's right, that's not. And I think it's based on his watching of those films and a feeling that you have. But I think we're very proud that in certain of the scenes, we felt like we were in one of those old movies.
Yeah.
And that felt great to us.
Well, you said about it being revisionist already. There's a lot of ways in which this film feels like a hybrid. So, you know, you have that element of it being a spy film, but also in a European vein, the way in which it's shot, the locations. There's also that sort of 21st century repartee between the two men, even though it's set in the Cold War. I guess one of the things is that you have always enjoyed that idea of men, the male bonding in all of your, well, most of your films,
yeah.
Anyway. What was it about this project in particular? I'm guessing there's probably childhood connections as well here that drew you to seeing that you could peel away another layer of the male condition, as it were, and then put it into such a film like The Man from U.N.C.L.E.
I think to answer your question as efficiently as I can attempt to, right, is that there's so many unconscious things that you're motivated by that when someone comes up with a title like Can you do anything with Man from U.N.C.L.E.? And in about 10 seconds, you can cross-reference unconsciously all the things that you find inspiring or interesting. And then you go, somehow I can make it work. You're not quite sure how you can make it work, but you've got enough kernels of interest that you can go, oh, yeah, I can cross-fertilise the things that I'm interested in. And then what does that look like when you stick the cake in the oven? Does it come out? Oh, is that a cake I would want to eat?
Mm.
Right? And I think all of that takes place in somewhere between 10 and 30 seconds.
Yeah.
And then it sort of, then you imagine the picture, imagine what the cake will taste like. And then you've already, in the 30 seconds, you've already seen all the ingredients. And you don't know where you've drawn them all from. But you just go, well, we've got two blokes, we've got one's a Russian, one's American. Oh, the 60s. Okay, great cars and some of those outfits. Oh, didn't like those outfits. Just get rid of the architecture.
Yeah.
But then, and how do you make it contemporary? So contemporary, and this all happens, I think, in 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just go, dum, dum, and then before you know it, you got that picture. And you really saw that picture 2.5 or 3 years ago, or whenever it was we set out on this project, and that all happened in 30 seconds. And pretty much within, you know, 10, 15%, you ended up with what you thought you were going to end up with.
Yeah. No, I think that's right. I think we both grew up so immersed in these movies, in this world. It was unconscious, it was innate. There was a lot of knowledge that we had, we didn't realize we had, of that world. It felt very instinctive, a lot.
It feels, to me, despite all the, glamorous European settings and the different, nationalities that are in it, it actually does feel still very quite British to me. And in Henry, we have yet another, seriously amazing British actor, along with the likes of Eddie Redmayne and Benedict. What do you think that appeal is at the moment? It just seems to be growing all the time.
Can I just write on that question? There was an article about how British actors, they seem to be taking over Hollywood now. And you've cast Henry as an American and Jared Harris as an American.
Yeah.
You can speak to that a little bit. Some people say it's training. Some people say it's something else.
I don't know. I mean, almost everyone we work with is English. and it's...
Robert Downey's English. And,
But it's funny. Yeah. It's so on the present that no one ever discusses it anymore.
Yeah. I mean, if you ask us to think about it, probably is training has a lot to do with it. Our own familiarity and comfort with English people and English actors and a sort of... There's an understanding, there's a shorthand, there's all that thing.
I know, but I'm aware with lots of the stuff I watch, I go, oh, they're English, and none of them are playing Brits.
Mm-hmm. That's what I mean.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
But
seems to be a wave. I mean... One actor told me it's because we're cheap, but but I don't believe that. Yeah. But yeah, it just seems like just this continual wave, and obviously representing Japan, they are getting, some of them are becoming big superstars in Japan.
Are they? But I wonder what the statistics on it are.
Mm.
I wonder what the ratio is. I mean, there's 300 million Americans, there's, 65 million Brits. So, is that one in six? Or is that 1 in 6, 1 in 5?
Yeah.
So it's 1 in 5. So if you took all those actors and you actually did the arithmetic, is it 2 in 5? Is it 3 in 5? Is it 4 in 5? I don't know. We do have quite a ratio, 1 in 5 anyway.
Yeah.
It's not like, because we also think that we're the size of a cornfield in California, which we keep getting told that we are.
Yeah.
But there's quite a lot of people that live in that cornfield. So it's not like there's not a lot of Brits.
Yeah, sure. But also, you've got an amazing tradition of television drama, you've got an amazing tradition of theatre, you've actually got a vehicle for these talents to develop.
It's not just that. I shot a commercial in LA 3 years ago or something, and I was aware that almost my entire crew was Brits as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they all live there.
But why do you think it is?
But the Brits have always loved it.
Yeah.
There's just always been that tradition. And it's
is
so.
Is it craft or is what they? I mean,
I don't
why
know.
Do they?
I think it
why is it? Why is Shakespeare? I mean, maybe it goes from starts from there.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It comes across, I think, in the movie, definitely in a kind of, I don't know, it's quite a way. But also, did you feel because you're obviously it's a lot of people won't know, but it is actually obviously an old 60s TV series, so people of a certain age will remember watching that quite avidly. So did that result in any pressure at the beginning? Was there any pressure that you felt coming from that original series?
Not really, because again the kernel of the idea came from my memory of the series.
Mm.
So it was without me becoming too analytical of the original series, I went, oh, I remember that, and I remember that, and I remember liking that.
Mm-hmm.
So again, it was just one of those things where you roll your eyes and you lob all the ingredients in a pot of what your reference, your memory, which is quite judicious or particular, right? Your memory works in quite an efficient fashion in the sense it gets rid of what it doesn't like and puts in what it does like. And I just went on the basis of that. There are certain things I was stuck on, right? Karaoke, I had to be blonde. One needed to be blonde, one needed to be dark, one needed to be straight, one needed to be loose. There was just certain things that it had to be that way. And outside of that, then I didn't care so much, because then it just became about, well, how am I going to make this work?
Going back to the cast is quite international, but did you ever consider to have the KGB spy, a Russian actor?
We didn't rule it out, but it wasn't something we thought about as important necessarily.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the other thing is, actors are actors. So I suppose that's another reason I forget that so many actors are English. Is because you approach actors because they can act. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. And Army is of Russian descent. His grandfather was Russian.
Who's
Army?
Oh, right.
Army. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Armand Hammer was Russian.
Right.
So. And so, what's about Istanbul?
So we like you talk about Istanbul. Yeah. But
we'll see. Let's see. What about Istanbul? That's the question we ask before asking
ourselves. This looks like the start of a new franchise.
Yeah.
And you've got one already going, so do you see this running on and on alongside Sherlock?
Again, that's you.
With Sherlock, King Arthur,
Three
Man from Uncle,
yeah.
Three, yeah, that would be great.
Yeah.
Let's do them one after the other.
This was tremendous fun to make.
Yeah, yeah.
It was, not in any small part because we spent 6 weeks gallivanting around Naples and Rome. Or certainly felt like 6 weeks,
didn't
it?
We love it.
Yeah.
It's another one of those sort of, if you like, what's the word, buddy movie? I mean, they're not really buddies, are they? What do you think the appeal of that is? You know, that whole Sundance, shut up, this.
It's just life.
Okay.
I think that's just life. And it's people getting to know one another. And that's such a pertinent subject for all of us that it just feels pertinent.
Yeah, yeah. Also, let's not forget they have a third buddy who's a girl.
Yes,
we're quite proud of that.
Yes,
that's a different perspective on things.
I think that's,
who's outsmarting all of them?
He's outsmarting all of them.
Absolutely.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
that's the
end. We enjoyed that challenge.
She
as well.
Kind of holds the key. Yeah, it's
yeah.
a good twist actually. Though.
Good.
It's unexpected. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you.